Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. From now through the summer, The Brian Lehrer Show is collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. We have a separate page for each county in our listening area, so listeners, go click on your county or your borough and post a story about how your community has changed. Today, Nassau and Suffolk counties. In a little while, we'll talk with both the Nassau and Suffolk County executives, Ed Mangano and Steve Levy. Right now, Long Islanders, our phones are open for you to tell us. How is your community different today than it was 10 years ago? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I'm going to go right to a caller, Anthony in St. James on the North Shore out there in Suffolk County, who's going to have, I think, one of the most common stories of change we could possibly hear about Long Island in the last decade. Anthony, thanks a lot for calling.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. What you got?
Good. Okay. I moved into St. James, which is a town in Suffolk County. Purchased a home in 2000, and my property tax was $9,800 a year. I moved out of Commack, which is about 7 miles away, and taxes were about $3,000 more in St. James, a nicer home, little nicer area. Now, presently, year 2010, I'm paying roughly $16,600 in property tax. I feel we're being taxed to death with these, increases for the school budgets, and it's just it has to come to a point where, we need to put a lid on these taxes.
Do you have a school budget election in your town today?
Yes, we do. Today we do. And you know what, Brian? I'm really unsure of which way I'm going to go with this vote.
Is it that you think teachers are overpaid or have too much in pension benefits, or you think the school in general, school system, is not getting its money's worth, or what? As a voter at the school budget and your property taxes, what gives you pause?
Listen, I believe that there's a whole list of problems. I do believe teachers are compensated very well. They do a great job in educating our children. I do believe the pension funds are ridiculous. I mean, I'm a self-employed person, and I don't get cost of living increases to my pension. I got to create my own pension. And I also believe there's a lot of waste in the system. When there's millions and millions of dollars at stake, it's not being run really the way it should be, and a lot of waste goes out the window.
Anthony, thank you for starting. I got to run, but thank you very much for starting us off. We really appreciate it. And
okay, thank you, Brian.
There's obviously a big story of change, a story of big change in Nassau and Suffolk, as in the northern suburbs, as in New Jersey, as in Connecticut, and coming to a head coincidentally today in the school budget elections taking place in most of New York State other than New York City, which gets its school budget in other ways than property taxes. So there's one story of change. Long Islanders, tell us yours. Any story of change that you see or that you personally have experienced that you think represents a larger trend in your community, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Some common questions you might answer: who's moving in and who's moving out? How has the housing boom, housing bust changed your community? 212-433-9692. How have the politics of your community changed? If power has shifted in your community, how and why? And we'll talk to both county executives about this later on, as we've seen power go more from Republicans to more Democrats, and now a little bit back the other way on Long Island. 212-433-9692. How has 9/11 changed your community? It's almost been a decade. Or any story untold of change in your community that needs to be told. 212-433-WNYC for those of you in Nassau and Suffolk counties right now on your anecdotal census, our people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2012. And while your anecdotal census calls are coming in, we will run down some pretty revealing recent census numbers with Larry Levy, longtime Newsday columnist and Channel 21 host, the public television station on the island. He's now director of the Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University in Hempstead, Nassau County. Hi, Larry. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
So here are some basic facts about Nassau and Suffolk from the Census Bureau. Some of these were actually quite surprising to me. Tell me if they surprise even you. Mm-hmm. Number one, despite the reputation as a place where people grow up and leave, which I think the island is getting, the populations of both counties have been growing in the last 20 years, and the percentage who are children has remained about constant. Nassau has about 1.4 million people, Suffolk 1.5 million. That's slightly fewer than Manhattan, to put it into context, which has 1.6 million, substantially smaller than the city's most crowded borough, which is Brooklyn, which has grown to 2.5 million people. We'll focus on Brooklyn in this series next week. But Larry, did you know that the population continues to grow in both Nassau and Suffolk?
Well, growth is really nominal. There as a as an overall percentage, growth is negligible. We're having a lot of churn, and that churn is really interesting. And that churn speaks of major, major changes. We are getting older as young people grow up and decide that this is not a place that is hospitable to them. We're getting older because the baby boom generation is aging in place more than a lot of people realize. Not everybody is fleeing to Boca. You know, some of them are staying in Brookhaven. And we are also getting poorer. Some of that is a reflection of retirees. Some of it is a reflection of new immigrants coming in, younger families coming in to replace those who are fleeing to Boca. We're also getting more colorful, so to speak. The most noticeable change to people who have lived here a long time are the number of people of color, Indians, Asians, Latinos, and other groups are coming in and turning communities that had at one time been all white into unusual and in many cases successful integrated communities. But that's not to say that, and in fact, it has not changed an essential fact about Long Island, which is it's still one of the most segregated places. Mm-hmm. That people of color are still living with people of color, and whites, by and large, are living with whites, even though we're starting to see some change.
And of course, if people of color once met overwhelmingly blacks, that is changing, as you were indicating, very much in Nassau County. And here's a stat that reflects that. As with our entire area, the immigrant population is booming, doubling in Nassau from 10% foreign-born in 1980 to 20% foreign-born, according to the Census Bureau, by 2008. In Suffolk, immigrants were just 7% of the population in 1980, doubling to 14%. Again, by 2008, according to the census. And I wonder if that relates to what you call the aging of the population. But with respect to the churn, another surprising stat to me looking at Census Bureau data was that the percentage of children under 18 has not actually changed very much in recent decades. A little under a quarter of all Long Island residents are children under 18. That's about the same as in 1990. And it's right around the national average. 24% of all Americans are children. We have about 23%, I think it is, in both Nassau and Suffolk. Again, a perhaps surprising resiliency compared to the idea of those young people growing up and moving away.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the big problem in terms of young people isn't the, you know, the 0 to 18s, because they basically live with their parents. And as I said, there is churn. And when a new family moves in, they move in with their kids, by and large. That's still one of the reasons people move to suburbia, is to, you know, better schools for their kids and quieter, roomier neighborhoods with parks. The big problem on Long Island is the 18 to 24 or 18 to 30-year-old groups. These are kids, and they're not kids anymore when they reach that age. These are adults who Long Island has spent a lot of money educating, and they go away to college, or maybe they come to Hofstra or to Delphi, and they stay on Long Island for college. And then they leave. And they leave because there's not enough rental housing for them, other sorts of affordable. There's not enough housing in downtown areas that have a feel of a city that are exciting. So they're leaving. And it is a youth drain that is a real threat to Long Island's economic viability.
Then who's having all those kids? Immigrants.
Immigrants, yeah. Immigrants are having it. And new families. New families that are moving in. Demographically poorer families tend to have more children. Mm-hmm. So we're getting, and we're not talking about desperately poor people, but they're poorer than the ones they're replacing.
So let me get on a couple of phone callers who I think in the things that they're calling to talk about are going to continue to tell this particular story. Like Eric in East Meadow in Nassau County. Hi, Eric. You're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What you got?
Yeah, I noticed also that with the taxes being so high, nobody in their 20s is able to afford living in my town anymore. In my parents' day, they were able to buy a house when they were, 25 years old. But when I was 25 years old, I still had to live with my parents because it was so expensive to pay the taxes. Even if I was able to pay the mortgage, the taxes themselves were 10, 12 grand a year. And that was just too much to go with the high cost of living in with college.
Eric, thank you very much. And so, Larry Levy, how does that go along with the idea that poorer families are moving in? If housing prices are high, and they're certainly much higher in Nassau and Suffolk than the national median, and property taxes are so high, and young adults like Eric wind up living with their parents until they're 25 and can't buy the homes, as you were saying before. How does that square with this trend of poorer families also moving in? Where are they living?
Well, the key word is the as in poorer. Again, these are if a family, a person who owned a business for until he was 65 and made good money, sent his kids to great schools, moves away, this may be somebody who was earning $200,000 a year. They're selling their house, perhaps, to somebody making $100,000 a year. Now, that's poorer. That's not poor. Mm-hmm. And but people who are truly poor are living in illegal housing. A lot of homes in single-family neighborhoods, to the naked eye, look just like when I grew up, but it's not like that. The key is that you'll see the extra garbage cans. You'll see the extra cars. People are renting their basements out. They're renting their attics out. Some people are acting as instant landlords. They move to Florida, but they don't sell the house because they can't get a good enough price for it now, and they're renting it to two families. We're seeing more and more of that because of the low amount of rental housing available, which is making it harder for guys like the last caller. Not only can't he afford to buy, but he can't afford to rent either, even if he could find a place. And this is a real problem for Long Island. If it doesn't solve it by building affordable homes in downtown areas around train stations, businesses are not going to have people to employ.
I think Matt is hoping to be part of that solution. Matt in Great Neck, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling your anecdotal census.
Yeah, hi, Brian. I just wanted to, I'm actually, I think, part of a trend in the past few years of I'm not young, I'm not old. I'm around 40 with children who moved out of New York City and actually came back to a town that my wife and many of her friends grew up in Great Neck. They lived in Great Neck, grew up in Great Neck, moved out, went to college, lived in Manhattan or elsewhere for a while, and then came back because they realized that, the town was wonderful for what they wanted. I mean, we have some of the best schools in the country, literally. We have excellent parks, excellent services, and I'm happy to pay the taxes for it. I know that my tax dollars, I see exactly what they go towards, and I'm happy to pay it. In fact, I'm about to go out and, support my school budget because I know that without tax dollars, we won't have the best school district in the world. And I think that there's a number of people like me or like our family who have come back to towns like Great Neck, North Shore towns are all over Long Island because the services, are much better and in the long run than you can find elsewhere. So, that's my situation. We moved back to Long Island. We're very happy here. We love Great Neck. We love where we are. And again, we're happy to pay the taxes that support it.
Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, Brian, the last two callers really define the political fault line in suburbia.
Uh-huh.
There are still many people moving here. There are still many people who feel they're getting value for their dollars. But there are also an increasing number of people who they may not be angry, but they're certainly frustrated as heck. And even if they're not sure what to do about it, who do not feel they're getting value for their dollars. And when that fault line moves, as it did last November, you see change in leadership. Tom Suozzi was voted out of office. You'll be talking to Ed Mangano, mm-hmm. who was able to capitalize on that fault line widening, you know, at a very bad time for the Democrats.
And we're going to do that in just a minute. We'll also continue, listeners, to take your stories of change on the phone. All our lines are full right now, so wait till people finish up, and then you can get in at 212-433-WNYC as we continue with your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010, today focusing on Nassau and Suffolk counties. I want to thank our first guest, Lawrence Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University in Hempstead. Larry, as always, it's great.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And when we continue, we will take more of your calls with your stories of change from all over. And we're getting calls from all over Nassau and Suffolk County. And we'll talk to both county executives, Mangano and Levy. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're talking about Nassau and Suffolk counties today. Next week, by the way, next Tuesday, Brooklyn. And we have a page on our website for every county in the greater New York area, up through Fairfield in Connecticut. Of course, both counties on Long Island today. All the counties in New Jersey that are part of the metro area and north of the city in New York State as well. A county page for every county. Go and post your stories of change. And especially you Brooklynites, since we'll be talking about your county next Tuesday. On that website, Jessica from Montauk wrote, I grew up in Montauk, the daughter of a fisherman, and even though I now live on the other end of the island in Brooklyn, I visit my family at least every other week. When my parents moved to Montauk, now about 30-odd years ago, everything closed down in the winter, and I'm told that sometimes you would see deer in the middle of town. Throughout my life, things have slowly gotten busier and fancier. In some ways, this has been a good thing. The quality of the IGA, our local grocery store, has greatly improved. At the same time, more and more businesses are opening that seem almost exclusively aimed at tourists. East Hampton is much worse, she writes. There are almost no shops left for locals, but somehow they now have a Saks Fifth Avenue. When I went to school, there was a very small Hispanic population, which was almost exclusively whole families and generally middle class. Now the population is much larger and seems to be less integrated. And she concludes, East Hampton has become more like Southampton, and Montauk is becoming more Hamptonized. And I can only pray that the housing bubble keeps bursting, because I still can't imagine a day when I could buy a house out there, writes Jessica, originally from Montauk, now from Brooklyn. Kathy in West Islip, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you. What's your story of change?
Well, we moved out of the city, I guess, about 17 years ago when we decided to start a family, and moved into West Islip, which is a waterfront community right where the Robert Moses Causeway goes over to the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it has multi-million dollar homes on the water, and it has some much smaller little bungalows further north. The further north you get away from the water. And what I've seen happen is taxes are quite high. The people who are not as affluent are really being terribly squeezed. But the people down on the water in the last decade all took out mortgages as the property values just went through the roof. I mean, properties out here tripled in price, just about. And they made their houses gigantic. I mean, they used to be nice homes on the water, and now it's practically wall-to-wall house. I mean, and a big brick mansions that look like they belong out on the moors in England. I mean, it's the ostentation is not to be believed.
And now that the bubble has burst?
Well, there are a couple properties that have gone up for sale, but nothing much is moving because no one's really willing to take. I guess people aren't in such desperate straits at this point that they can unload. But the people, property values also went up in the poorer districts, and now those people are saddled with high prices, and they can't really afford to sell their homes because a lot of them bought as prices were coming up. And now that, so nothing's really happening.
Do you think there's a policy response needed to this? Because we have the Suffolk County Executive Steve Levy standing by, and after him, the Nassau County Executive. But with respect to West Islip, is there a policy response to this, or is this just more a function of how people have changed, how culture has changed?
Well, the rate at which in our town, today we're voting for the school budget, the taxes, the property taxes that support the school budget, are 90% on the backs of the homeowners and only 10% on businesses. So actually, our school budget, even though this is a somewhat affluent community, I think we're the third lowest school district on all of Long Island as far as what we spend on our children, because people simply can't afford to pay any more in taxes and afford to live here.
So you're voting yes or no on the school budget today?
I'm definitely voting yes. Because
despite everything you said?
Yes, absolutely, because my children are in the system, and I think they deserve the best education they can get. I think they do an amazing job with the money that they have. I mean, but they already are doing things like rationing paper in the classroom.
Yeah. Kathy, thank you very much. I really appreciate your call. On your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. And we will touch base now with the Suffolk County Executive, followed by the Nassau County Executive. Suffolk County Executive Steve Levy, as many of you know, has recently changed parties and is running for the Republican nomination for governor of New York State. He was elected twice to the county executive position, the first time in 2003. County Executive, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be back on the show.
By the way, we just had Larry Levy from Hofstra on before you. Is he your long-lost cousin?
Well, I call him Cousin Larry, but not by blood relation, I have to say.
Okay.
But he's a great guy.
So where would you start to respond to Kathy? Were you listening to Kathy from West Islip?
I was. And the frustration is certainly understandable. Schools comprise at least two-thirds of the average person's bill. Now, to put that into perspective, I've actually kept taxes very much under control. In fact, I've had 6 years in a row without a general fund tax increase in Suffolk County, but on a Suffolk County level. But people aren't really going to feel that so much because, while when I came in, the county part of the bill was maybe about 13%. Now it's under 11%. So even if I were to cut taxes on the county level by 10%, the impact is not that much in absolute terms. The big nut is the school, two-thirds of someone's bill. And, of course, the lion's share of those costs are personnel. We have a very expensive school system out here on Long Island. We have very good schools, mind you, but it's a very expensive system. That's why, if I could just add, it's why I've been calling on a state level for a local property tax cap. People cannot take it anymore. They're leaving the island. And what good are all the great programs if you can't afford to live here in the first place? Your child is never going to enjoy those programs.
That's what Governor Christie has been advocating in New Jersey as well, as you know. Do you think he's a good model for you if you're elected governor with respect to the property tax cap at 2.5% and to his push for a teacher's wage freeze?
I think Governor Christie is doing the right thing in saying that the times are requiring extraordinary measures. We're in extraordinary times. This is not something that you look at every day. It is something that you have to look at when we've reached this kind of crisis mode. And I think, I have been calling for New York State to declare a fiscal state of emergency, open up the contracts, put freezes in place, get a spending cap on the state level where they've increased spending by 70% over the last decade, have a property tax cap. Just to put this into perspective, Brian, in a 6-year period here on Long Island since 2000, the cost of living increased 27%. school taxes increased by 72%. Mm. That's alarming. People can't handle that. It's unsustainable. Someone has to come in, a strong leader, and say, enough. People deserve a break. And you know what? We live with a cap on the county level. It has not led to major dislocation of services. It forces you to prioritize.
What else would you add to change topics here to the open-ended question that's at the heart of our series? And that is, what's a story of change that matters to your community in our area? From the time you were elected county executive in 2003 until today, and obviously the one we've been talking about is a huge one, but what else would you add to a list of some of the biggest changes you've seen in Suffolk County? Anything, demographically, economically, whatever you think is changing and important.
Well, of course, it all starts with property taxes, but there is concern, and you heard it before from some of your callers, that the younger generation does not believe that they can experience the American dream on this island. And that's despite the fact that we've had a housing burst and of the bubble, and the prices are coming down. The real estate taxes are just too high. And as Larry Levy was alluding to a little bit, I believe, I didn't hear all of his commentary, mm-hmm. but there is a need to look at Long Island from a different perspective now. It's not the case anymore where people are getting married and having kids when they're 24 years old. You know, some people, many young people, are waiting till their 30s for that. So you have a lot of single young people who are not feeling the desire to stay here on the island. They're looking to more urbanized areas where there's more action, there's more nightlife, there's more affordable homes, there's more accessibility to transportation. They're not looking for a four-bedroom house on a quarter acre or half an acre.
Do you think the island, as a matter of policy, could do something to attract those people back or keep them when they grow into young adulthood, or is that just a matter of American culture?
I think we can do something, and I'm fighting to do it. But we're being fought every step of the way from some who want to stay stuck in the status quo and in the 50s. I mean, there were a lot of great aspects to suburbia in the 50s, but we also have to marry that with the new realities and, with these changing demographics.
That's what does that mean at a policy level?
Well, it means doing the kind of things that Larry was talking about, the kind of things that I'm promoting, building more affordable housing in our downtown areas.
Higher density housing around train stations, he was saying.
That's exactly what we've been doing. You look at the village of Patchogue, for instance. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it had a vacancy rate of 70%. We came in, the county worked in conjunction with the local village. We had a vibrant mayor who wanted to actually get things done. We partnered with the private sector. Developers came in and built beautiful new storefronts. On top, we have very nice affordable housing. Those young people in these affordable housing units now become patrons for the businesses. And they're at 90% occupancy now. And we're doing more and more of that, which creates a sense of optimism where people want to invest into these communities. We're doing the same thing in Ronkonkoma. We're going to be doing the same thing in Wyandanch. We've done it in Bay Shore, and we're starting to see these downtowns come back.
And just before we say goodbye to you and bring in the Nassau County Executive, Ed Mangano, you got well known for your tough stance against illegal immigration. Larry Levy was talking about, in the same analysis, how the population would be shrinking overall throughout Long Island were it not for young immigrant families coming in. And it would be aging so much, as it is in a lot of America, were it not for young immigrant families coming in, keeping the ratio of those under 18 pretty much the same as it was in Long Island 20 years ago. So would you say that overall immigration is a net plus for Suffolk County today?
Well, first of all, I'd say the thing I got most known about in my area is being an ardent hawk against tax increases.
But in fairness to you, that's what your most immigration thing is what you're most known for outside Suffolk County.
That's because all the New York, that's the only thing the New York Times wants to write about. But the fact is, the people in this county have elected me because I've kept taxes under control for the last six years.
But on immigration.
But let me just say, see what you did there, Brian, is you said immigration without distinguishing between legal and illegal immigration. So, you know, I'm a big supporter of more legal immigration. I think it's great for our culture. It's great for our economy. I draw the line on illegal immigration,
but if
and
people
I think
are
90%
against,
of the public
right,
agrees with me.
But if you're against illegal immigration, the premise of that has to be that the illegal immigration is causing too much overall immigration to the area. Otherwise, you wouldn't be concerned about
no,
the status.
That's not
no?
accurate. I don't put the two together at all. I welcome more immigration when it's done in a legal fashion. If you have a need in your labor pool, then do it the right way with people being vetted and waiting online properly, but not by people cutting in line and doing it improperly. And I think 90% of the public is with me on that. But
What's the main problem that illegal immigration has caused, in your opinion, for Suffolk?
Well, you know, first there's the fairness argument that people have been waiting online for 10 years to come in here the proper way. Secondly, you've got, people who are engaging in an illegal underground economy where businesses who are trying to play by the rules and do the right thing and pay their taxes and get licensed and pay health care and workers' comp are being undercut by those businesses that cheat the system. We have, other problems with overcrowded housing. We have problems within our schools. But the bottom line is, if you're asking the question of what do we need going forward mm-hmm. to attract young people, mm-hmm. it's not a question of immigration, legal or illegal immigration. It's a question of providing the housing in the right places with nightlife okay. and keeping taxes under control. Because if taxes are as high as they are right now, even with housing prices coming down, people cannot afford the tax nut, and that's why they're voting with their feet and moving off of the island.
Steve Levy, Suffolk County Executive, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
It's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're talking about Nassau and Suffolk counties today. We'll get to more of your anecdotal census stories in a couple of minutes. But now we bring on the Nassau County Executive, Ed Mangano, the Republican who defeated Democrat Tom Suozzi last November. County Executive, so nice to have you join us. Welcome to WNYC.
Pleasure to be with you, Brian.
And I think you were listening to Steve Levy, your colleague from Suffolk. Do you want to just say ditto, or what would you add to start out that's different in Nassau County?
You have to forgive me. I didn't hear all of Steve's comments. I was finishing up a separate conference.
Sure. So let me ask you the basic question that we're asking all our listeners in this series, and that is, what are the important stories of change that you have seen in your community? And that's what people have been calling in about, from Great Neck to West Islip to Montauk, et cetera, et cetera. With respect to you as the brand new county executive, what kinds of changes in Nassau County over the last 10 years of this census period do you think have been most important to the quality of life?
Well, for quality of life, and one of the areas that we're concentrating on is obviously our park system. Our park system has been, run down and privatized in certain areas, and we're returning parks to the people. We're running an aggressive capital improvement program to refurbish our bathrooms and make them more inviting for residents to use. We've established our own county-run summer recreation program for youth to take part of our park system. So that's one of the areas, the quality of life areas that our office, and certainly during the campaign, right. Residents alerted us to their disappointment in the county park system as compared to the town parks, the town of Oyster Bay Parks and the town of Hempstead Parks, which were in, you know, much better shape, cared for. And we're trying to make our park system what it once was,
okay.
which is a beautiful place.
So that's a policy initiative that you've got going. That sounds good. But what about the big sweep of change in Nassau County, demographically, economically? Like, has the housing bubble followed by the burst been an overall positive or negative for Nassau County, would you say, with the population changes that have taken place that we've been talking about with our previous guests through the hour? been noticeable and positive or negative? What the biggest changes to the county over the last 10 years?
I think the big game changer is the fact that the local economy is sluggish. I think the big game changer is that our commercial real estate market is sluggish, and with many empty commercial spaces more and more popping up each day. So we're concentrated on job development, economic development to create jobs. So there's opportunities for our young and old alike that need to work here to support their families and raise their children and provide a good education. And right now, those options are limited. They're limited. They've become limited over the last 10 years. And we need to do all that we can to spur job growth. And that's what we're doing here in the county.
How do you do that? And is the goal to create jobs in Nassau County per se? Because, of course, the old reputation, which may be outdated, is that it's a bedroom community and people commute into New York City.
No, the focus is to create jobs here. Let me discuss one program where I think is a job creator that makes sense. I've launched a sustainable loan fund. We're coming to the final stages of that. But basically, we propose to loan homeowners and business owners the money to convert their properties to green energy resources, you know, geothermal, solar, anything that is verifiable that will save them money on their utility bill. That obviously, one, helps with cash flow because they'll save money monthly and they'll pay the county back with a portion of those savings. Two, creates jobs because engineers, architects, excavators, HVAC people, carpenters, electricians will go to work converting homes and businesses to green energy resources. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you get a boost because obviously a lower CO2 emissions.
Last thing for now. County Executive Steve Levy from Suffolk said that he's working on greater density, more affordable housing around train stations as, you know, a pro-growth strategy for his county for the future. Do you think that's right for Nassau, too?
Well, it certainly makes sense to help our downtown districts. Obviously, the population there will help the struggling commercial districts. It makes sense because they're a transportation hub and people can live there that may not necessarily have, you know, one or two cars and they can get to work. So we're looking at that. Some of that's occurred in Nassau County. Most of it is a town process or a village process as they control the zoning. But we have a number of programs that can assist commercial developers in launching that type of development. We're supportive of it.
County Executive Ed Mangano from Nassau County, thank you for spending a few minutes with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
On your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Let's go back to our phones. Rich in Wantagh, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Brian. Big fan.
Thank you. What's your story of change?
The story, just what Ed Mangano said, if you were to drive in Nassau County from the Seaford Oyster Bay Expressway to the Wantagh Parkway, the amount of commercial real estate that has gone out of business, the availability is just, it's insane. There are what used to be big box stores have even gone out. Car dealerships obviously have gone out, but it's just, it's boggling. The other thing is that I have friends who are teachers, attorneys, financial planners, all different jobs, and the people who are doing the most, or the people who are the most well off are the teachers, which is just an amazing thing. I have a friend who is an attorney at a pretty successful firm in Manhattan, and his wife makes almost 1.5 times his salary, and she's a teacher in Nassau County. It's insane.
How are you voting on your school budget today?
Oh, I never vote the budget. I always vote it down. I don't have children in the system. My sister-in-law has kids in the system. She's obviously going to vote for it, but I never vote yes for the budget.
Rich, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. And Sherry in Lindenhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to, in response to the gentleman from Great Neck earlier, he mentioned how he's happy to pay his taxes, you know, because he sees the services that he gets in return.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to kind of say to him that, or say to everybody, that that's wonderful, but I'm sorry, can you hang on just a second?
Sure. Sure has to that, take care of some business. Go ahead.
Okay. No, that there are plenty of us who would be willing to do that if we have the same services you know, evident in return. I felt like the way that he made the point made it seem like there were a bunch of us out here screaming, you know, we don't want to pay taxes, but we want the services.
You think it's on a town-by-town basis? Now, of course, Great Neck is very wealthy,
yes,
more than Lindenhurst.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So I'm happy that he's having a great experience in Great Neck, and there are pockets of that, but I don't think that that's representative, you know, of Long Island as a whole.
What's the biggest change you've seen in Lindenhurst in the last 10 years?
I would say that, and it's kind of in response to something else that was raised, it's how much there are 2, 3, 4 income homes, more cars on the streets, and that's how people are, the poorer people are affording the homes. I think that you're having, you know, people in your home working two jobs, the mother and the father out of the home, plus rentals. And I think that, you know, it's not really ever spoken about how that's a real drain on our quality of life.
Sherry, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. It's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Today, focusing on Nassau and Suffolk counties. A week from today, on Brooklyn, you can post your Brooklyn stories to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. More of your Nassau and Suffolk calls in a minute at 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're doing it every Tuesday on our show through the summer. Dante Chinney from the political demographics group Patchwork Nation has recorded quick takes on each of the counties in the New York area for our series. He's studying every county in America. Here's Dante Chinney. Dante Chinney's 60 seconds on Nassau and Suffolk.
A lot of times when you think of Suffolk and Nassau County, you think of them as twins, as brothers or sisters, however you want to think of it, out on the island. And there's some truth to that. They are similar. Obviously, Nassau's a little closer to the city. It's more dense, and it's a little more diverse. Suffolk, a little further out, Suffolk is about 87% white, and Nassau is about 80% white, and Hispanic population is about even. There are a few more immigrants in Nassau. So what do you see going forward? Well, I think if you live in Suffolk, look at Nassau, because I think that what happens is what the change that kind of slowly comes out of the city as the city gets more diverse comes to Nassau first and then slowly works its way into Suffolk. So if you're in Suffolk, look to Nassau. If you're in Nassau, look to the city to see really how things are going to be changing for where you live over time. Both of them, again, fairly wealthy places, but I do think there are going to be some changes there.
All right, Dante Chinney's take from Patchwork Nation. And Jeff in Merrick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for telling my call. 2 points. First, about Nassau and Suffolk. I live in Merrick, and I got to give credit. Suffolk County has some things that Nassau doesn't have. Like, you still have some of the Hampton homes that people pay taxes, even though they don't consume a lot of services, because mostly of that is seasonal. And some of the programs that Steve Levy has done to help Suffolk hasn't come to Nassau County. Nassau County has more poverty. My point is, if you take, for example, like you were saying to Steve Levy about immigration, you take, for example, a city like Copaig, which is a heavily Polish population. They support a lot of the small manufacturing that's still out in Long Island and Deer Park and in several other places. In Nassau, you have a lot of these poor and illegal immigrants whose children cost us programs in the schools. There's a lot of programs for English, a lot of programs for anti-gang, a lot of programs that drain money out of the pockets of people in Nassau County like they do in New York City. So I just want to reiterate that point.
For which you would like to see what done?
I would like to see more of the enforcement codes that Levy is doing in Suffolk in Nassau.
Jeff, thank you very much. Jeff and Merrick. And with us now is Suffolk County Police Officer Lola Quesada born in Ecuador. She is a police department liaison to the Latino population in Suffolk County. Officer Quesada, so nice of you to join us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so very much, Brian. It's a pleasure.
How fast is the Ecuadorian population growing and the Latino population overall in Suffolk County?
The numbers are very mixed in Suffolk County. The Ecuadorian population has increased, especially in Patchogue. There has been an increase over the last 20 years. I have spoken to different advocacy groups, including the consulate, to ask them for the real numbers. And no one can give you an accurate number of how much the population has increased.
Why Ecuadorians? Why do Ecuadorians move to Eastern Long Island? What's there for them?
At the time, 20 years ago, the booming economy of construction. We were booming. New constructions, that's why I came into Suffolk County, too. Uh-huh. I knew that there was not only a quality of life, but also the availability for us to work within the county. And people and the new immigrants are coming for those same reasons and became part of our communities.
Has the flow stopped during the recession? Can you tell?
Yes, I've had several community members tell me that they're returning back home. There is no work. They're struggling here like many people in the community that is having the same experience. But they are able to return back home and say, we really are struggling here and we need to go back home.
Your job as community liaison for the police department is necessary in part because of the tensions and in some case violent tensions between the immigrant and native-born populations. How do you work to prevent those incidents?
The purpose of my job and also in a representation of the police commissioner was to be able to bring together the immigrant community to make them understand and also to educate and also to be able to let them know who we are as a police department. They have a misconception, many immigrant communities, that we're here to either deport them or put them into jail because they might be illegal. We don't do that. We've never had a policy anywhere at any time that says that we have to ask for documentations or to service the community that we serve, and we've been serving this community for over 50 years.
Do you think that the Arizona law has any ramifications for Latinos in Suffolk County, or for that matter for you trying to do your job in local law enforcement and keep ties strong?
I believe in my department and the cause that we have here in Suffolk County, so it's very important that we have proactive programs to keep that community safe from the information that happens in other states. Sometimes the new immigrant community believes that what's going to happen in Arizona is going to happen here in New York, too. So we have to let them know that that is an Arizona's choice. We have laws here that protect them as new immigrants.
One person posting on our website said the Latino families when she was a kid 20 years ago in Montauk tended to be intact families and were better integrated into the community and more middle class than now. Now there's more, various kinds of families. Of course, there are all in throughout American society, families aren't intact in the same way. And the immigrants are poorer and more segregated. Do you think that's all true?
I don't think so. I think that the new immigrants, and I'm not an expert in this, and I think that I would have to give it to a professor in this, but I think that the community is very diverse. The new communities have a diverse, some people I've met that have college degrees back home that are working here doing jobs like babysitting or housekeepers or landscaping. I also deal with a lot of immigrant communities that are, don't have that educational background. Assimilation is important, but we're a mosaic society now. We're not, years ago we used to call it the melting pot. We're more a mosaic. We keep the identity, we keep culture, we keep all those things that make us proud of who we are.
Suffolk County Police Officer Lola Quesada, born in Ecuador, a police department liaison to the Latino population in Suffolk. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you so very much, sir.
And we have time for one more call in your anecdotal census for this week. How about Paul in Freeport? Paul, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make two quick points. I think, number one, it's not fair to the average school district that's trying to have people just arbitrarily vote no against their budgets because they don't have children in the school. And the other thing is my wife and my daughter are both teachers. One is in a good school district and makes a very nice salary, and the other is in a poorer school district and doesn't make such a nice salary. But by the same token, everybody wants to balance the budget on the back of teachers, but they also want their children to go to Ivy League schools and get all sorts of degrees themselves. And I don't think it's fair to just turn around and try to fix things on one group.
Paul, thank you for your call. And that is the last word for this week's edition of your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. Once again, I think this has been great. Thanks to so many of you from all over Long Island who have called today. Thanks to both county executives for coming on with us, and Larry Levy from the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University. This continues next Tuesday on our program with Brooklyn, and we have a page for Brooklyn and every county in the New York metro area on our website. Go and tell a story of change in your community over the last 10 years. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Coward, and Alan Smith produced this program. Our Anecdotal Census editor is Valerie Lipinski. We had intern help today from Matthew Gurry, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm Brian Lehrer.